It was a convergence of Hollywood glamour, civil rights activism, and one of the world's greatest jazz orchestras. It was vaudeville and high art, comedy and romance, an act of musical pride and protest, audacious and subtle in its repudiation of racism. It was staged in Los Angeles, the entertainment capital of the country, in the summer of 1941, as Americans anxiously watched a global war unfold around them. It was Jump for Joy, Duke Ellington's celebratory musical.
Fare thee well, land of cotton. Cotton Lyle is out of style. Honey child, jump for joy. Don't you grieve, little Eve. All the hounds, I do believe, have been killed. Ain't you thrilled? Jump for joy. Have you seen pastures groovy? Oh, green pastures was just a Technicolor movie. When you stomp up to heaven and you meet old St. Pete, tell that boy to jump for joy. Step right in, you beat some skin and jump for joy.
Jump for Joy ran for 101 performances, with Duke Ellington's legendary Blanton Webster Band playing every night in the pit. Hollywood screenwriters helped author its sketches, and its all-black cast of 60 included future movie stars, dancers, and singers. Film celebrities such as Orson Welles, John Garfield, and Charlie Chaplin were drawn into its orbit. Its satirical songs and skits were so daring that white segregationists issued death threats to some of the show's actors and producers. It never made Broadway, but it did make history. Duke Ellington, looking back in 1964.
We are now 1941, Jump for Joy, and all those wonderful people. Now, that was a great experience.
Huh?
Jump for Joy. Because now we met these kids out in Hollywood, about 16 of these writers, picture writers, and they wanted to do this show, Jump for Joy. An all-Negro show with a social significance theme. And the idea was to banish Uncle Tom from the theater.
Duke Ellington had long wanted to banish Uncle Tom from the theater and, as he said, say things that would make the audience think. In the late 1920s and 1930s, he had honed his musical and stage skills in the annual song, dance, and comedy reviews of New York City's famed Cotton Club. This song, Cotton Club Stomp, is an Ellington composition from the review Blackberry's Crop of 1930. Ellington had also steeped himself in the artistic and cultural fervor of what African-American writer James Weldon Johnson called Black Manhattan. Ellington biographer and Smithsonian curator of American music, John Edward Hassey.
For a couple of decades, there had been all-black reviews and musicals on Broadway. Then in 1921, the musical comedy Shuffle Along debuted with songs by UB Blake and Noble Sissle and featuring an all-black cast. And it became an unexpected, huge smash hit. And then Broadway began a vogue for black reviews that helped spark a market for black entertainment and art. And this vogue for African-Americans that went hand-in-hand with the Harlem Renaissance and with a burgeoning interest in African-American blues and literature helped open doors for Ellington.
Jazz educator, composer, and musician David Baker on how Ellington's early review work influenced Jump for Joy.
I don't think that there's any question that the stuff he did with Jimmy McHugh and Dorothy Fields at the Cotton Club starting in 1927 would have had an effect, because he would have been able to see about pacing. He would have understood where you place certain things in the show. He would have understood how you brought back material. But I think he was also trying to make it as much Negro-oriented as possible, looking for the universals the same way somebody like Bill Cosby does, the universals in the Negro experience, but also making sure, through the use of the jive talk, through the use of the dances, that it retained that element which he called, you know, my people.
Ellington wanted to go beyond the work which he'd done for earlier shows such as Hot Chocolate and the Cotton Club Parade of 1938. He wanted to upend their plantation settings and racial caricatures. He and the other writers of Jump for Joy wanted to use the form of the review to satirize the negative media images of African Americans that were so prevalent in 1941 America. Ellington assistant and Jump for Joy scholar Patricia Willard.
Every film, every stage show, every play felt that somehow they had to portray African Americans as eye-rolling, shuffling, dialect-speaking individuals. And there was none of that in Jump for Joy.
On Sunday, February 9th in 1941, Duke Ellington delivered a speech, We Too Sing America, at an African American church's annual Lincoln Day service in Los Angeles. The speech spelled out an aesthetic and political credo that would underpin Jump for Joy's attack on racism. The speech survives only in text form. Here's an excerpt read by poet and Indiana University professor Kevin Young.
I contend that the Negro is the creative voice of America, is creative America, and it was a happy day in America when the first unhappy slave was landed on its shores. There, in our tortured induction into this land of liberty, we built its most graceful civilization, its wealth, its flowering fields, and handsome homes. Its pretty traditions, its guarded leisure, and its music were all our creations. We stirred in our shackles, and our unrest awakened justice in the hearts of a courageous few, and we recreated in America the desire for true democracy, freedom for all, the brotherhood of man, principles on which the country had been founded.
Cultural historian Michael McGurr.
Jump for Joy comes at a time of real change in the lives of African Americans and in their status in the United States. Just think of where Jump for Joy debuted in Los Angeles. Because of black migration out of the South, Los Angeles is becoming a magnet for African Americans in building a new African American urban community, one that has parallels in cities all across the country. At the same time, the onset of World War II, not yet involving the United States directly, that would come at the end of the year, the end of 1941, the onset of World War II was going to force all sorts of changes for African Americans. It was going to open up new economic opportunity. Factories in Los Angeles, for example, ready to employ African Americans because they needed them in order to produce what was needed to fight World War II. At the same time, the war dramatized the contradiction between America's professed democratic and egalitarian ideals and the realities of African American life in the United States, especially in the South, where African Americans had been denied the right to vote. So economically, legally, politically, things are starting to change. Jump for Joy is a part of that sense of possibility that something might really be changing.
Something else that was changing was Duke Ellington's orchestra. Throughout the 1930s, it had continued to evolve as a tightly swinging, symphonic unit projecting the Ellington sound that would later be dubbed Beyond Category. John Edward Hassey.
By 1940, Ellington's band seemed to be hitting on all cylinders. There were several things that made a difference. Most profound was the addition of two tremendous players, the great Ben Webster on tenor saxophone, who brought a powerful southwestern U.S. blues-drenched style to the Ellington Band, and the virtuosic young tragically short-lived bassist, Jimmy Blanton. He turned everybody on their ears with his incredible playing and almost single-handedly turned the bass from an accompanying instrument into an instrument capable of real, sustained solos. Those two talents had been just joined by Billy Strayhorn, this really kid out of Pittsburgh who was quickly learning the Ellington compositional and arranging style and would soon make invaluable contributions to the band, composing the band's theme song single-handedly, Take the A-Train, and then going on to co-compose with Ellington hundreds of works.
Ellington brought this orchestra to California in January of 1941 for a seven-week stay at Culver City's Casa Manana Ballroom. One fan who stopped by frequently was Sid Kohler, an MGM screenwriter who was working late nights on the latest Marx Brothers film, The Big Store. Kohler struck up a friendship with the band, and they began to play long weekend jam sessions at Kohler's place. One night, Kohler returned from work to find Hollywood luminaries such as Lana Turner, John Garfield, and Harpo and Groucho Marx all enjoying a group of Ellington musicians in full swing. Patricia Willard.
Got home late. The party had already started in his house in the Hollywood Hills. And he walked in, and the music sounded great to him, and he said, "This joint sure is jumping." And he said, Duke turned from the piano and said, "Yeah, jumping for joy." And somebody else said, "Hey, what a great name for a musical." And it just apparently spontaneously grew from those remarks at this party. And the people who were there were people who could make it happen.
Though Jump for Joy sprang from that momentous evening, the notion had been brewing for some time in several of its creators' minds. Paul Francis Webster, who had helped write some of the show's songs, had been bandying about the concept of an African-American musical called Rhapsody in Black. Ellington himself had had similar aspirations, and his short 1935 film Symphony in Black had depicted spiritual and social dimensions of African-American life. Over the next several months, Kohler, Webster, screenwriter Hal Bourne, and others collaborated with Ellington, often by phone and mail, to write the show that would become Jump for Joy. Poet Langston Hughes contributed a sketch called Mad Scene from Woolworths, and County Cullen often set in on rehearsals. On July 10, 1941, the musical premiered at the Mayan Theater in Los Angeles.
You know, it billed itself as the Suntanned Revusical, and an opening number was called the Suntanned Tenth of the Nation, which reflected the demographics of the United States of America.
Jump for Joy began with performer Paul White being followed across stage by a ghost. White suddenly turned on the ghost and shouted, "Boo!" causing the ghost to faint. Then he turned to the audience and said, "See, I told you it was only propaganda." As the orchestra played, Duke Ellington delivered a monologue from the pit, spoken here by poet Kevin Young.
"Now, every Broadway colored show, according to tradition, must be a carbon copy of the previous edition, with the truth discreetly muted and the accent on the brasses. The punch that should be present in a colored show, alas, is disinfected with magnolia and dripping with molasses. In other words, we're shown to you through Stephen Foster's glasses."
A dancer tapped across the rooftops of a Manhattan skyline while the band played Stomp Caprice. Blackouts were used to segue the show from number to number, a practice innovative for its time. In another change of pace, Jump for Joy used a variety of directors for its set pieces and sketches. Patricia Willard.
Nick Castle was the chief choreographer and directed the dance numbers, but not the show. I mean, each skit was more or less directed by the person who wrote it, with input from the performers. It was nothing, I don't think, was ever more cooperative than Jump for Joy.
David Baker on the challenges that Jump for Joy presented to Ellington.
Well, first of all, it's the coordination of all of the various art areas. First of all, you got dance, which Ellington never strayed far from. It had, like, basically poetry disguised one way or another. It had art, because they had to design sets and the whole thing again to make it work. And Ellington had to come up with something that would be comparable to what would have been happening on Broadway at the time, because that was what was going to sell it. And also make the statement that, hey, look, there's an oeuvre of music that is being neglected. Here's what that is.
Thank you. penny for the moon, a nickel for a dream, a quarter for a tune, like the old mill stream. But I'd give a dollar and my heart to follow for the brown-skinned gal in the calico gown. A puzzle for a pal, a jackknife for a song, a garter for the gal in the blue sarong. But I'd give a necklace, because I'm reckless, for a kiss from the miss in the calico gown. Having much use for worldly goods, Robin Hood's for me. If my love's worth a nickel, it's worth a peso. Mine for the giving, hers for the say-so. A pony for a cart, to take her out to dine. A scissor cuts a heart on a valentine. Then a sky blue bonnet with pink ribbons on it for the brown-skinned gal in the calico gown.
Brown-skinned gal in the calico gown highlighted the talents of Ellington band singer Herb Jeffries. Its promotion of romance between an African-American man and woman was also considered bold for that era. The object of Jeffries' serenade was a young future Hollywood star, Dorothy Dandridge. Dandridge would later become the first African-American to be nominated for a Best Actress Academy Award for her performance in the 1954 film Carmen Jones. Her stay in the Jump for Joy cast lasted for only several weeks. Patricia Willard.
She opened the show. She was only about 17 years old. She was very insecure, despite the fact that she was beautiful and talented. And the way I was told was her mother insisted that she have more roles, bigger billing. She wanted more for her daughter, and she put so much pressure on the show and on Dorothy. The Dorothy, according to Henry Blankford, absolutely collapsed and sobbing and said, I can't do this. I just can't do this. It's too much for me. And so she was quickly replaced with Judy Carroll.
Calico gown.
Another somewhat unlikely figure in the Jump for Joy saga contributed a song, Cymbal Rockin' Sam, that featured Ellington's drummer Sonny Greer. The song's author, known to most Americans at the time as America's cinematic boy next door, Andy Hardy, was Mickey Rooney.
Well, he wanted to be a composer. He wanted to be a drummer. He was like 21 years old, and he loved hanging out with all these people. And Sid Cutler said he had no drumming talent, and he had no songwriting talent, but of course he was a big name because he was a very, very popular actor. He said he was a nice kid, but he wanted to be something that he really couldn't be. Sid said they only kept the number in for a while because it was by Mickey Rooney.
One famous Hollywood actor and liberal gave the show significant financial backing. According to Patricia Willard, his motives were romantic as well as ideological, inspired by one of the show's striking singer-dancers.
John Garfield was madly in love with Marie Bryant. And John Garfield partly invested in the show because he believed in it and believed in what it stood for and what it was saying. But he also wanted to do anything that would advance Marie Bryant's career.
Marie Bryant liked John Garfield as a friend, but she was in love with Ellington's trumpeter, violinist, and singer, Ray Nance. Both of them performed the Ellington-Sid Cutler song Blib Blip in Jump for Joy. Here we hear her with co-star Paul White in a version recorded for a Soundie, the 1940s equivalent of a music video.
My love to you I bring on a collar you can sing. Blip, blip, vibe, flim, 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 hip, the baba doodle bab. My love for you is true. On a kind of you can do. Blip, blip, bobby, flam, flam, flam. Hip the baba doodle bab. My poor heart gives a start like a jitterbug just won't stop. I lick my crooning when I'm spooning. I let the meha blow on my top. Swish, made up to you, I've sworn. On a kind of mine is yawn. Blip, blip, bobby, flam, flam, flam. Hip the baba doodle bab. My love for you's intense, even if it don't make sense. Blip, blip, bobby, flam, flam, flam. Hip the baba doodle bab. Love for you is ripe, on account of your mind type. Blip, blip, bobby, flam, flam, flam. Hip the baba doodle bab. My poor brain went insane from the moment I met you, kid. But now I'm thriving on your diving. Watch me flip my lid. Woo! My love for you is high, being you're a groovy guy. Blip, blip, bobby, flam, flam, flam. Hip the baba doodle bab.
One enthusiastic Movieland attendee, fresh from his masterpiece Citizen Kane, was Orson Welles, who wanted to make Jump for Joy a Mercury Theater production.
It was early in the show, and he came back several times, Duke told me, but he wanted to own it, and he would totally finance it. He had the money, and he was very, very impressed with it. But they said, no, nobody owns it but us. I mean, there's no one person who's ever going to own Jump for Joy.
Welles instead hired Ellington to write music for the jazz segment of It's All True, which would become the first of several legendary abandoned Welles films. The two would collaborate again on an early 1950s production of Faust. Artists such as Garfield and Welles were drawn to Ellington partly out of admiration for his music, partly out of sympathy for the plight of African Americans, and partly out of a desire to promote the left-wing causes with which they were involved. Ellington returned their sympathy, sometimes playing benefits and lending his name to various committees. Jump for Joy also drew on the militant satire of earlier left-wing musicals such as Pins and Needles, Meet the People, and The Cradle Will Rock. It was a time in which many artists' political and artistic goals overtly converged, a time which historian Michael Denning calls the Cultural Front. Michael McGurr.
Ellington, in approaching the Jump for Joy project, is following the same line of interest, his absorption in black history, in the black past, in the black future that had been there almost from the beginning of his career as a musician and that was going to crest with Black, Brown, and Beige and New World a-coming. He found, I think, in the popular front, as it were, the broader artistic left, partners. He found a good time to work, and at least in L.A., a good place to work, that he completely absorbed their politics and their outlook. I don't think so, because, again, Ellington always held something back with people and always followed his own agenda.
We give you Duke Ellington. Duke, will you lead off our salute to labor? Well, I'm going to find it kind of hard to live up to all those things you were saying. But if it includes swing,
it does just that. American swing.
Okay, then let's go with the Jump for Joy choir. The title song from the show, Jump for Joy.
A penny for the moon, a nickel for a dream, a quarter for a tune, like the old mill stream. A
But I'd give a dollar and my heart to follow to the brown-skinned gal in the calico gown. A puzzle for a pal, a jackknife for a song, a garter for the gal in the blue sarong. But I'd give a necklace, because I am reckless, for a kiss from the miss in the calico gown.
Another Hollywood legend and left-winger whose path crossed with Jump for Joy was Charlie Chaplin, who was given a private rehearsal of the show by some of its key creators.
Duke and Sid Cullor went to Charlie Chaplin's house, had dinner, and performed it for Charlie Chaplin and his girlfriend of the moment, Carol Landis, the actress. And Charlie Chaplin told them that he was so enthusiastic. Oh, he says, I love it. He says, I want to own it, but I want to direct it. I want to be involved. This is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And so they told him they would love to have him as a director, but and they'd be thrilled and honored, but they couldn't let him own it because it was totally cooperative.
Chaplin did give advice to a young parking lot attendant and aspiring comedian, Wonderful Smith, who had several roles in Jump for Joy. In one sketch, Smith employed a device that would later be used by white comedians such as Bob Newhart, speaking into a telephone while audience members imagine the responses of the person at the other end. The person in this instance was United States President Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Hello, operator. Give me long distance, please. Washington, D.C. I'd like to talk to my commander-in-chief, the President of the United States. Just charge it to the new deal.
Wonderful Smith said that Charlie Chaplin had snuck into the theater and watched him rehearse and then sent Catherine Dunham, who was his later girlfriend, in to tell Wonderful that he should rehearse in private and not overexpose himself and not be in too many skits because his material was so fresh that it was going to be stolen. He said, all the comedy writers in town are going to be sneaking in here in the back of the theater.
Hello, Mr. President. This is Buck Private Wonderful Smith of Arkansas. Yes, sir, Smith. No, sir, I'm not related to Governor Al Smith. There's quite a difference in us. Much difference is night and day.
This recording, taken from the 1941 movie Top Sergeant Mulligan, is nearly a word-for-word reprise of Wonderful Smith's Jump for Joy monologue.
Mr. President, could you please tell me what our Congress accomplished in its last meeting? Thank you, sir. $15 billion for that. $20 billion for that. And $50 billion for that. Well, sir, Mr. President, how does a fella feel to ask for 15 or 20 billions of dollars and don't get it? You don't know.
You're listening to Jump for Joy, Duke Ellington's celebratory musical. Jump for Joy also included satirical skits and songs such as Uncle Tom's Cabin is a Drive-In Now, in which a plantation setting transformed on stage into a black-owned restaurant as Ivy Anderson sang, "Jemima doesn't work no more for RKO, she's slinging hash for Uncle Tom and coining dough." This biting celebratory humor provoked a less than sympathetic response from some Los Angeles residents.
In 1941, America was still, in many places, a segregated country. Not only throughout the Deep South, but in many northern cities, you know, African Americans could not get a decent hotel room. So segregation ruled. This was some of the backdrop against which Ellington was struggling and trying to make a statement and succeeding in making a statement with Jump for Joy. One of the pieces in Jump for Joy even earned the show producers death threats. That's the piece, "I've got a passport from Georgia and I'm headed for the USA." And eventually they took it out of the show rather than risk bodily injury or even death.
Passport from Georgia, written by Hal Bourne, Paul Francis Webster, and Ray Golden, and sung by Paul White, included lyrics such as "Farewell Charlie, So Long Joe, Goodbye Jim, and I Do Mean Crow," and "I've got a passport from Georgia, and I'm going up where life's a cinch, where the cravat's a correct tie, where you wear no Dixie necktie, where the signs read out to lunch, not out to lynch."
A group that identified itself as the Glendale Ku Klux Klan threatened the cast and the producers, and they ended up getting security guards to accompany them anywhere. There were threats stuck under the stage door with burnt notes with burned edges, drawings of figures being hung from scaffolds. I was told that Paul White was afraid to do Passport from Georgia anymore because he got so many specific threats.
Passport from Georgia was one of several songs from the show that went unrecorded. In spite of the threats and the song's removal, Jump for Joy continued to delight and embolden African-American showgoers. Ellington said, "The Negroes always left proudly with their chest sticking out." Michael McGurr.
One of the first signs of liberation is this ability to laugh openly and to compel the culture to make fun of, to accept humor about the segregated South. Jump for Joy is a part of that, just like the film Cabin in the Sky that would come a couple of years later is a part of that, or the Count Basie song The Same Old South. All of those are part of this sense of change that for the first time, awful as it is, African Americans can laugh at and make fun of that segregated world. And it's the first sign of them transcending it and moving beyond it.
Ellington later commented in 1964 on the extraordinary care that Jump for Joy's writers took with humor and how it reflected on African Americans.
"We had 12 weeks of discussions every night after the show concerning the Negro, the race, what constituted Uncle Tom, what constituted chauvinism, what constituted everything. I mean, we'd have to change a sketch, you know, practically every night. Because it's, and the cats would sit up, 15 cats would sit up and prove in their discussion why this thing, where it appeared, where it was very, very funny, and it appeared to be legitimate, but actually it was a form of Uncle Tom because there was a compromise there. And it was, you know, done on a very high level. You know, pinpoint fine. And then, you know, you sit there and do that, you know. And by that time, you know, you get to see these things from all the different angles."
Racial sensitivity was just one of the elements that Jump for Joy's many writers considered in their nightly revisions of the show. Patricia Willard.
One of, I think, the great qualities was that it was flexible enough that it could change from somebody's, well, you know, the thing was, they never got it set. Well, they kept improving it or taking the audience's reactions into consideration or thinking new ideas or coming up with new skits or finding that a skit didn't work, so dropping it. Nothing was ever absolutely set.
A part of the show that always remained, however, was the song that became one of Duke Ellington's biggest hits, sung by Ivy Anderson in a kitchen setting. David Baker on the appeal of "I Got It Bad and That Ain't Good."
"It seems to cut across all lines. Very difficult to sing. Those intervallically, it's very difficult. But perhaps it's that degree of subtlety that makes it such a strong song.
Never treats me sweet and gentle the way he should. I got it bad, and that ain't good. My poor heart is sentimental, not made of wood. I got it bad, and that ain't good. But when the fish are jumping and Friday rolls around, my man and me, we gin some and pray some and send some. He don't love me like I love him. No.
I Got It Bad and That Ain't Good was a showstopper for Ivy Anderson. Other numbers, such as Bugle Breaks, put multiple talents of the Ellington Orchestra on display. John Hassey.
There was a really deep connection between Duke Ellington's music and the theater. "I am a man of the theater," he once said, and Ellington liked to deploy soloists, like characters in a play. He planned and orchestrated the comings and goings. And he was given to feature players who would have dramatic outbursts of melody. And various players in his band took on certain characters' roles. For example, Rex Stewart was that clever conversationalist on cornet. And Lawrence Brown was the sublime and beautiful voice on trombone. And Tricky Sam Natten was the growling, sometimes humorous, sometimes wry voice on muted trombone often. So the players had very distinctive voices, just as actors do in a grand play.
Ellington's experience with theater and film extended to more than just the Cotton Club reviews and Symphony in Black. In 1930, the Ellington Band had appeared in Check and Double Check, a movie feature for the white comedy team Amos and Andy, who used blackface in their stereotyped comedic depictions of African Americans. John Hassey on what happened to some of Ellington's musicians in that film.
Two of his players, Juan Tizo, who was a Puerto Rican, and Barney Bigard, who was a Creole from New Orleans and relatively light-skinned, were forced to put on black makeup so they would appear to be Negro. When Jump for Joy debuted, Ellington made sure that the performers did not have to don blackface makeup, and they were so elated, so grateful that some of them came off the stage for the first time in their lives without this horrible mask, they came off the stage in tears.
Bugle Breaks served as an accompaniment for a comic dance by the vaudeville team of Pot, Pan, and Skillet. In one skit, they played tailors measuring a man for an oversized, extravagant set of clothes then very much in fashion. It was Pot, Pan, and Skillet's sketch that introduced a new term into American lingo, the zoot suit. This song, Subtle Slew, was also written as an accompaniment for their act. 5 years later, fitted with lyrics and retitled Just Squeeze Me, it would become a vocal feature for Ray Nance. Ellington brooked no pandering to audience expectations for an all-black musical, but he did feel that Jump for Joy needed a blues. He already had a performer in mind for it, Joe Turner.
Duke sent him a telegram. He was working at Cafe Society in New York, and Duke sent him a telegram and said, "We want you out here." And so Joe came and moved into the Dunbar and claims that he co-wrote Rocks in My Bed. He doesn't get any credit for it, but... Then he was added to several of the skits, and he was a big hit in the show. And then he enjoyed so much success, he stayed on the West Coast, mostly for the rest of his life.
Although Turner performed Rocks in My Bed nightly with the Ellington Orchestra after joining the cast, he never recorded it with them. In September of 1941, however, as the show was nearing its close, he did wax a version for Decca, backed by the Freddie Slack Trio.
My heart is heavy, is lit, because the blues is done spread rocks in my bed. Of all the people I see, why do they pick on for me and put rocks in my bed? All night long I weep, so how can I sleep with rocks in my bed? Now I'm a just can't stand. No, ain't with two people in this world I just can't stand. That's a jealous-hearted woman and a two-faced man. My baby's gone, and I know she won't be back. My baby's gone, yes, and I know she won't be back. Says she's lower than a snake, way down in a wagon track. Says she's long, she's tall, she's shaped just like a willow tree. She's long, she's tall, she's shaped just like a willow tree. I tell the world, my baby's all right with me. So I'm gonna call up to China, I wanna see my baby's over there. Yes, I'm gonna call to China, I wanna see my baby's over there. Say, I've got a feeling my good gal's in this world somewhere. I've got rocks in my bed, I've got rocks in my bed, I've got rocks in my bed. Yes, there's rocks in my bed. I'm under love and overfed. My gal's gone, so instead I've got rocks in my bed.
Rocks in My Bed was another Ellington hit that emerged from Jump for Joy.
Musically, Jump for Joy is easy to underestimate because it comes from this period that so many people believe is the absolute pinnacle of Ellington's art, a time that had produced one classic after another. Harlem Airshaft, Coco, you name it. Jump for Joy reflects that and includes a couple of the greatest ballads that he would ever write, Rocks in My Bed, and I Got It Bad and That Ain't Good. It produces the kinds of up-tempo swinging pieces that he could just seem to toss off by collaborating with his band. Giddy Bug Gallop is like that. And it's also got this satirical edge that's so basic to the show and that comes through in a song like Chocolate Shake with those terrific lyrics that he sets up so well musically.
Chocolate Shake. Venus de Milo had charms. She gave the Greeks quite a break. Now that poor gal is minus her arms from doing the Chocolate Shake. It was under an African sun that Stanley met old Livingston. While the gal shook their fruit, he blew on his flute, seeking the zag while en route. Shoot! They introduced a new thrill that killed them on old Sugar Hill. Then it spread like a rhythmical quake, keeping Manhattan awake, doing the chocolate shake.
Jump for Joy received enthusiastic reviews from Ed Schallert of the Los Angeles Times and Almina Davis of the Black Weekly, the Los Angeles Tribune. Because the show kept changing, Davis reviewed it more than once. She wrote that, "In Jump for Joy, Uncle Tom is dead, God rest his bones," and said Ellington's musical was Frederick Douglass to Cabin in the Sky's Booker T. Washington. Other reviews from tabloids such as Variety and The Hollywood Reporter were mixed. Patricia Willard says that there was little ambivalence, however, on the part of Jump for Joy's audiences.
They wouldn't go home. Herb Jeffries told me that, he said, you know, they demanded that he stay and sing his hit of the moment, Flamingo. They demanded that the band keep playing. It was altogether enthusiastic, standing ovations. People came back to see it over and over. I was told by some of the performers that people would memorize the dialogue in the skits, and if they would, some of them, and they said it was a group in the balcony that would call out the dialogue, and if the dialogue had changed, everybody would crack up because they had to memorize new dialogue so that they would be up. I mean, it had its own, I guess, band of groupies.
Why didn't Jump for Joy make it to Broadway? There were a number of reasons. Ellington's label, Victor, showed little interest in doing an album of the show.
Original cast albums weren't being done in 1941, but Paul Francis Webster felt in this case there should be one. I don't even know if that was what they called it, or what he called it, but he went to RCA Victor and said, this is, you know, he showed them the reviews, invited them to the show, said, this entire show deserves to be recorded. It should, the entire cast should be recorded, and every number in the show should be recorded. You'd have a great, great package. And he said that the brass at RCA Victor told him, no one would ever buy a record of a whole show. We couldn't do that. We'll record the good music, the better music in it. Ellington's under contract with us. We'll record some of Ellington's music, but nobody does a whole show.
Because of Victor's decision, several songs such as Flame Indigo, Sharp Easter, Concerto for Clinkers, and Shh, He's on the Beat were never recorded, and for decades their Ellington-written melodies were believed to be lost. Even the songs that were recorded by Victor did not get radio exposure during the show's run because of a contract dispute over royalties between the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, known as ASCAP, and American radio stations. The sheer expense of moving the Ellington Orchestra and the 60-member cast across the country also proved to be an overwhelming obstacle. And, in the end, Jump for Joy's mockery of racial stereotypes and its celebration of African-American pride made it an unlikely candidate for New York's Great White Way. After 101 performances, Jump for Joy closed on September 27, 1941. The phrase nearly always used to describe it afterwards by both its participants and those who saw it was ahead of its time. Despite his failure to take Jump for Joy to Broadway, Ellington would continue throughout his career to create ambitious, extended works such as Black, Brown, and Beige, Drum is a Woman, and My People.
Jump for Joy needs to be seen as part of a lifelong fascination with, involvement with, and commitment to African-American history, life, and culture. It was part of a progression of works of his. Not the culmination, but certainly an important part of the progression.
America has not been terribly receptive to anything that moved outside of what was prescribed for, at that time, what would have been called Negro musicians. I'm not sure how much more receptive it is now. But at that time, certainly, there were so many obstacles. And I can't imagine what the disappointment must have been to Ellington to see that dream die a mourning.
Duke Ellington, in his lifetime, never really got his full due from critics. And on the one side, he was able to accept that and move on as a practical musician who literally did have to move on to the next show, the next place. But he was human, too. It clearly affected him. And you see that in his memoir, this unique kind of autobiography that Music Is My Mistress became. He lists Jump for Joy as one of his proudest accomplishments. It was, and he was clearly disappointed that it hadn't been seen in that way, just as I think he was disappointed that Black, Brown, and Beige, 2 years later, wouldn't be seen as the extraordinary piece of work that it was. He felt that very deeply. He moved on, though, and that's why he kept producing so much and why, ultimately, he was accepted.
In the 1960s, the San Francisco demonstrator confronted Duke Ellington and said, "What is your position on civil rights? Why don't you ever make a statement?" Ellington replied, "I made my statement in 1941 in Jump for Joy." Long after his death in 1974, some of Jump for Joy's lost compositions would surface as lead sheets in the Smithsonian's Ellington archives, paving the way for a 1991 revival at a Chicago community theater. But no revival could ever completely recapture the zest, the defiant humor, and the musical majesty of the production that Duke Ellington presented to Los Angeles in the summer of 1941, or the drama of that time. The world was about to change forever in many different ways.
Fare thee well, land of cotton, cotton Lyle is out of style. Honey child, jump for joy. Don't you grieve, little Eve. All the hounds, I do believe, have been killed. Ain't you thrilled, jump for joy? Have you seen pastures groovy? Green pastures was just a technicolor movie. When you stomp up to heaven and you meet old St. Pete, tell that boy, jump for joy. Step right in, give Pete some skin and jump for joy.
Jump for Joy, Duke Ellington's celebratory musical, was written, produced, and narrated by David Brent Johnson and engineered by John Shelton in the studios of WFIU at Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana. Duke Ellington interview clips courtesy of the Carter Harmon Collection, Archives Center, National Museum of American History, Smithsonian Institution. Special thanks to David Baker, John Edward Hasse, Michael McGurr, Patricia Willard, and Kevin Young. You can listen to an archived recording of this program online at www.wfiu.indiana.edu.